This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dream.
Let's move over to another case that continues to develop. Mm. People tried to warn them. Anna Kempner's ex-boyfriend's family says they told her parents something was wrong with the stepbrother, that he was fixated on her, that there was a disturbing incident. And they alleged that they were dismissed. Anna's own aunt says she didn't want to go on that cruise. Now Anna is dead. The stepbrother is charged as an adult with first-degree murder and aggravated S abuse. And prosecutors are telling a judge he did this without any warning, that it doesn't add up. And what it reveals about this family, the suspect, and the investigation matters. Joining me to discuss, retired FBI special agents Jennifer Coffendaffer and Robin Dreek. Let's start here, Jen. Prosecutors wrote that Timothy Hudson, this is the stepbrother, the 16-year-old, carried out these crimes without any warning. And I'm finding this verbiage interesting in this document, that it was carried out without any warning and despite an apparent supportive family environment. Apparent, I think, is the word that's doing the heavy lifting in here, being what they're portraying. But the ex-boyfriend's father publicly claims, and so does the ex-boyfriend, that he tried to warn the parents and was dismissed. And Anna's aunt says that Anna didn't even want to go on the cruise. Why are prosecutors using that sort of language when the public reporting suggest warning signs were actually there and it wasn't just something that came out without any warning?
You know, I find it interesting too. And I think part of it might be because they have had the luxury of having interviews done and that they are feeling bad for these parents in a way. There's a certain human factor that goes into all cases as a prosecutor and as an agent. And even though we're supposed to have a lens that doesn't take into any personal, you know, feelings, sometimes the boundary is crossed. And I'm just wondering here if this prosecutor or prosecution team doesn't have some sort of sentiment of belief toward the parents. In other words, that's where it has to be coming from, right? It has to be coming from them and that they're believing me for this situation, right?
Yeah, and those word modifiers to me just are trying to sow a narrative of doubt, you know, for when it does go to trial, if they don't plead out. So, because anytime you see word modifiers before something, I immediately perk up. And this case so far, the statements we're seeing, lots of word modifiers.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and especially, I mean, this is a case that has a lot of red flags with the parents. I'm sorry, not that they, you know, murdered her or anything like that, but ignored warning signs. This isn't a case where it does appear to be apparent that there's tons of them. And I get, you know, everybody's human. There's going to be a human element that comes into things. But to overtly add those, I guess, maybe, and I don't know. I mean, somebody's not seeing the full picture here, or maybe they're seeing a fuller picture than we are. And maybe this is. I mean, it's essentially kind of almost stating it like the Asa Elrup defense of Heuermann, of like, it's right in front of you all this time. There are warning signs, but you're choosing not to see them, which, you know, can be true in a lot of cases if you are choosing not to see them. Not that you're intentionally making that choice, but you are just so on your straight and narrow of what you believe is, and the blinders are on, and you want to make this blended family work, that, well, kids are complaining. Ah, kids complain. It is what it is. I'm wondering if there's a lot of that going on, and the true gravity of these complaints, these issues, are only being understood far after the fact.
Well, you know, the perfect example of this, the egregiousness of sort of whatever, ostrich with their head in the sand, mm-hmm. and not going to get charged, is Jennifer Soda with Madeline Soda.
Mm-hmm. Oh, still, yeah. That case, that's still the most heartbreaking case of all times. So, I mean, we're coming parallel on these, but yeah, Missy Soto, that is one of the greatest travesties. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. I'm still befuddled that he didn't get the death penalty. I'm befuddled that they pled. I know it's water under the bridge, but we're seeing the same sort of you can play Sergeant Schultz, which I realize many people in my audience had no idea who I was talking about. That's from Hogan's Hero.
Hogan's Heroes.
Stands there, whatever happens.
I see nothing.
Nothing. And that's believed. And, I think the parents dismissed certainly the warning signs, but to say they didn't know them is garbage.
Yeah. And the thing that really, once this, I guess I'm being a little too positive on some of these cases these days, or trying to, give reasonableness.
Giving grace.
Yeah. Giving grace when I shouldn't, because this is another one. And here's the question, Jen. Have you ever seen a case where you have an assault as part of the murder, like we now discover in this one, that went from 0 to 100? In other words, it was accidental. It was an offshoot. No. To me, it's always an escalation that there's a lot of signs along the way on that. Or am I off on that?
I see what you're saying. So you're saying just the fact that there wasn't an essay first, say in another or in an attempt, and then all of a sudden you leap straight from essay to murder.
No, in other words, because there was an essay here as well as murder, it wasn't from 0 to 100. In other words, there was an escalation that would have been noticed.
Yeah. Look, just the fact when I'm picturing this in my mind, right? She's at dinner. She doesn't feel well. She wants to retire to the cabin. And if I look up and see the brother who I already know, there's information, go, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to go on a walk, or whatever. I'm just picturing all this transpire that night and him follow her into that cabin, and just how terrified she must have been, and how the parents just are probably drinking Cosmos and have no idea, or have an idea, but because they're drinking and having a good time on their cruise, aren't seeing it. Escalation. I don't know. For me, the minute he decided to SA her, to me, he probably decided to murder her, because I think he felt that.
And it's hard to imagine her not sensing that and being exposed to what he's attempting to do, what was in his mind in the weeks and months leading up to this, that were part of those red flags, that she was vocalizing something, a change in behavior, a change in demeanor. Other people are seeing it, because any individual is not going to hide that intent, because you have, especially in a close proximity where everyone's living together, and there's a lot of leakage going on between what is going on in here and what you're going to start manifesting physically towards someone if it's going to go into what he eventually wound up being accused of.
Well, he jumped on her, didn't he, and tried to dry hump her one time?
Yeah, I mean, the boyfriend.
And that's only what we know of.
That's what we know of. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to guess that there was other things, but I mean, that in itself is enough to be like, there's a massive red flag. I do not, again, unless it's 100% ostrich. And again, that's a hard one to prove, because some people are ostriches and they fully live their life that way. And you're never going to convince them to live the life any other way. They don't know how. Convince an ostrich not to be an ostrich. Good luck. Some people are the ostrich. If they have this knowledge, why on earth, as a parent, you're in any way, shape, or form considering, why don't you share a bedroom with this person who's attempted to do this to you before? I don't know if it's the stupidity of, if she really thought it was a problem, she would speak up. She would do something, and just kind of pushing the blame onto someone else would be fascinating to see. I mean, and not that they're even really having to answer for any of these things, but they should. But I don't know that there's really a legal mechanism where that even comes into play. Being an ignorant parent isn't necessarily a crime.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they find on the digital footprint of this, because the boyfriend witnessed something on the FaceTime, as we know, as he has stated. And I wonder what conversation he may or may not had with her after that, because teenagers text a lot. And I really wonder what they're going to be able to pick up on the cross chatter about what was going on from her. And my message to anyone that is surrounded by potentially creepy people that make you feel uncomfortable in any way, you got to start taking journals, man. Because if she had journaled in any way, and maybe she has, maybe we'll find this out, about what was going on, what she's saying, what she's feeling, what people are doing, he's doomed. Or whoever did this, again, innocent until proven guilty. But you've really got to document stuff.
Well, and this goes back to what we talked about in Celeste's case, right? In terms of he knew he was going to do this. He does it. Then he knows he's got or feels he has to murder. And then I guarantee he didn't have a plan for afterwards.
No kidding.
There is no possible way he could have lifted her. I'm telling you, it's just impossible to lift her up and throw her overboard. And I bet you anything, that was his initial plan. And then he thought, you know what? I'll just wait until we get docked and I'll find the right time frame. I'll hide her under here. And as soon as we get docked and I find the right time frame, I am going to make sure I manage and get her off and thrown over that night. That's what I think his plan was. And I think, you know, the maid finding her and how things worked out didn't work out well for him.
We're just kind of almost looking at a halfway executed plan and not just utter idiocy, basically.
That's what I think. I think he came up with a plan after she was dead and he was able to execute it because he physically wasn't able to execute it.
Yeah.
In some of the information that's coming out, we see information about some of the digital devices, not just Anna's, but her father, CK is the initials that are being used. So we're going to assume it's probably him that they're looking at everyone's devices in this this circle. If there is information on these devices, and again, big if, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but if there is information on her, on these devices of her warning the father of expressing issues here and it being dismissed or something of that nature, could we see charges against dad, against any of the parents here for endangering a minor? I mean, it would be child abuse at a certain point. If your child is coming to you saying, I'm being abused by someone in this home, and you're the parent saying, well, you know, buck up, you know, be you'll get through it. Growing up's tough, whatever BS, you know, is said. Could that be a possibility?
I don't think so. And I think we're already seeing that in the language in the prosecution's documents.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you have a little bit of precedent, I think, where parents have been held responsible for crimes. And that's the Crumbly case.
Yeah.
And in the Crumbly case, it exuded. I mean, they bought the gun. They let the gun be used by him. They, you know, sent him to training. They did, and they had the message that day, and they knew that he had made these drawings, or at least that the principal had called them about all this, right? So they had, remember there was a text message also that was sent that, oh my gosh, you know, the mother, all of a sudden, the light bulb turns on for her. But nevertheless, you had all these big overt actions, and that led to them being charged. I don't think those are going to exist here.
Yeah, it was a high bar that they set on that one, but they did set it. And I wonder if there's going to start being some leakage as we see more and more of these cases where parents aren't being parents. And I wonder if they're going to start ticking away at that a little bit or not. Because, yeah, you're right. It's very high bar to meet.
What is the difference here than the Crumblies where they buy their kid the gun? If they're aware that there's a potential S predator in their home. They've been warned by other people. This person is doing this. They were warned by him. Again, allegedly that these sort of warnings were being put out. And let's say they were, for the sake of the conversation. And they continued to basically put the gun in the room with her. But in this case, it's a human being.
I think it's going to have to come down to her. You know, when you think about these cases that, again, I just keep going back to our cases we're covering of the Duggars and all the cults, unless you actually have the victim themselves say exactly what was done to them, they're not going to go anywhere with it. They can't go anywhere with it. So even if it's hearsay that the boyfriend is saying he saw this, I'm thinking, again, I'm not the lawyer. You know, that's why, you know, Bob and Eric wind up. And also, Jennifer, you got a much better take on this than I do. But I would think we'd have to see something in her texting or in some digital things or writings from her that's going to have to say exactly what she did, what she felt from him, you know, the stepbrother, and what she reported to the parents. Am I right or no?
No, it's what you're right. And the third point you make on that is the most important. Was she begging not to be around him? Was she telling them that he's, you know, going after her sexually? And I just don't think, judging from what the prosecution's documents say so far, that that's the picture we're getting.
Right, because yeah, they're using the word modifiers. If they thought they had the things that made her more clear to the parents, it would be a lot more precise.
It's going to be fascinating to see where this all, and extremely sad where this all falls out. But again, another case that gets worse by the moment. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. Jennifer Coffendaffer, Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Go and press subscribe right there. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever books are sold. Highly recommended. Go and check it out this weekend or whenever you are watching this. All right. That's going to wrap it up for today. Until next time, for Jennifer, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.